Welcome back to another chapter of To Honesty and Comeuppance, an Attack on Titan fanfiction written by yours truly, Tolstoy Ackerman. You can find this fanfiction by clicking on the link in my profile, which will take you to all of my works hosted on AO3, or by going to AO3 and searching for the title of this fic, or my pen name, Tolstoy Ackerman, two words. Standard disclaimer, I do not own Attack on Titan, I only own the original characters here within, and this is entirely non-for-profit. Thanks for coming back for another chapter. Just a little heads up, there is a trigger warning. There's a little makeout session that is non-con towards the end of this chapter. Alright, without further ado, let's get into chapter 30. Chapter 30, Stolen Grapes and Apples. Levi sat in the chair at Erevin's bedside, imagining all of the different ways he was going to lay into Mel the next time he saw her. She may as well have declared war against the MPs with what she'd done when she'd rescued Historia, but she was no longer fighting on her own. She'd dragged Erevin and the entire Survey Corps into this with her, and Levi couldn't forgive her selfishness. He understood that she had had only an instant to react when they had drawn their guns. He understood that sometimes there were obstacles that couldn't be moved aside, they could only be shattered. But Levi was realizing, or remembering, perhaps, that her impulse was to shatter what could be moved. Erevin handed him a few leaves of paper. It was the reports of the Survey Corps guards that had witnessed her idiocy. "Read them, and give me your opinion." "What do you need my opinion for?" Historia had her eyes shut the entire time according to Himmel's orders, so Himmel's word is all we have versus these four. Do you think she was truthful with us? Levi took the papers, but he didn't look away from Erevin. "What are you thinking?" "Right after she told us the interior MPs were looking into her, and I forbid her from engaging with them, she manages to do just that." "I see what you're saying, but she couldn't have foreseen that they'd be there. You didn't foresee it either, even though you had suspicions that someone would try to make a move on Historia. How she handled the situation, though." He could feel his brows pressing together in frustration, and he forced them to smooth. "I have no doubt that killing them was a knee-jerk reaction for her. But she didn't kill them all. She left the Blonde and the Survey Corps men alive. And that is unusual for her. She's got a strict no-witnesses policy." "So you think that she had good intentions?" Levi sighed. "That's the thing about her. She usually does." "She ripped one of the prison bars out with her bare hands," Erevin noted. Levi hated how intrigued he looked by this. "And chucked it into a brick wall after that. The fucking idiot. She wants to hide what she can do, but when she panics, she forgets and goes crazy." Last night's turn of events tickled the back of his brain. For some reason, Levi felt as though he had been there with her when she'd wrenched the pole free. It was illogical, but he'd eaten and slept, so he couldn't write it off as fatigue. Yet he couldn't shake the sensation that he'd seen her with a great metal pole, swinging it around and knocking down dozens of MPs, and he was standing there watching her, wondering how anyone could be so graceful and destructive at the same time. Levi shook himself mentally. Whatever these ridiculous daydreams were, they were a waste of his time. Instead of letting his mind wander, he should be focused on all of the shit that was going wrong around him. Still, as the hours wore on and Erevin fell asleep, leaving Levi with nothing but his own thoughts for company, he found his mind drifting back to pick at the irritating loose thread that was part memory and part fantasy. What had really happened all those years ago? Slumber draped over him before he could recall. Undercity Ermich, 17 years ago. "Levi!" Before he could sidestep or shove her away, a woman in a darned barmaid's dress, with her unkempt hair swept up into a ponytail, wrapped her arms around him. When was the last time she'd washed that dress? Or her hair, for that matter. She probably had nits, and now he'd have to go scrub himself red tonight. "Oi, oi," Mel said beside him. "Hands off. He's not one of your customers." The prostitute harumphed, but pulled away, and Levi took a step back and straightened his vest. He didn't need Mel policing people for him. He turned to tell her so, but then saw that even as she kept her tone and eyes amiable, she was tapping her fingers on her thigh. Middle, index, middle, index. A veritable pulse for her irritation. She'd been doing that more recently. The tapping, but also getting bothered when people got too close to him. Levi liked to think that he knew why, but he was waiting for her to swallow her pride and say it. "You're no fun, Sabakia," the woman said with a pout. Mel rolled her eyes good-naturedly. "I know how to have fun, thanks. What's new with you, Claudia?" "Where's Tabby?" Levi asked. At the name of her sister, Claudia's smile trembled and slackened. Levi felt the little tug in his stomach that came before something precipitous, and decided it was best that the rest of this conversation not be conducted on the open street where others were loitering, looking for a whore or a fix or information that could be traded. He gestured for Claudia to follow, and the three of them lost themselves in the unlit side streets and in an abandoned house. Mel sat down with Claudia on the dirt floor and procured some bread and a canteen of clean water from the rucksack on her back. Claudia took the water, but the moment they'd gotten into the privacy of this house, she'd burst into tears and was too upset to eat. Levi stood there, content to let Mel calm down the girl on her own. She was better at that sort of thing. Mel put an arm around the brunette and soothed her. Any displeasure she'd had when Claudia had grabbed a hold of him was gone now, superseded by her inability to look away when someone was hurt. Even though her strange new swords on either hip created a hindrance, she pulled Claudia close. "Tell us what happened," she said. Still sniffling but slowly gathering herself, Claudia spoke. "Tabby went with a John 3 nights ago, and I haven't been able to find her. I'd never seen him before, but he was an upsider. I'm so scared he did something to her." Levi felt a dull ache of familiarity settle inside him. Prostitution was a risky vocation for many reasons, but those on the street instead of in the brothels were in 10 times more danger. At least in a brothel, each whore had their own room, and the owner would notice if they vanished or got sick or roughed up. The independent ones, like Claudia and her sister Tabby, only had each other to rely on, and going missing like this was their worst fear. Himmel and Levi had known the two for quite a few years now, and they were some of the few informants they counted as friends. Usually, a prostitute going missing elicited little more than a prick of discomfort in him, not because he was callous, but because it happened so frequently that it was less of a surprise and more of an inevitability. However, he knew Claudia and Tabby, and they had been good friends to him and Mel. He couldn't accept this. Mel was of the same mind. "Describe him to me." "He was pretty tall, with brown hair about this long, parted down the middle. Brown eyes. Freckles. He had freckles, and a beard trimmed neat. He was maybe a few years older than us. Early 20s? "That's good," Mel said, rubbing Claudia's arm. "Did he have anything unique about him other than the freckles? A scar or something?" She shook her head. "He looked pretty normal. Didn't seem like a weirdo. He had a nice vest on, and he was clean. That's how I knew he had to be an upsider." "Did you see where he took Tabby? What direction they headed in?" "I saw him taking her upside. We weren't far from the stairs that spit you out close to Walshina. I didn't follow them, though, so I don't know where he took her. God, she's dead, isn't she?" Claudia broke down again, and this time Mel put both arms around her and pulled her in close. "Levi and I'll look into it," she said. "I should have stopped her. I should have followed them. I should have insisted that he take me." "No, no," Mel said gently but firmly. "You had no way of knowing this would happen. Right, Levi?" "It's not your fault," he said. "See? Levi doesn't give a shit if he hurts anyone's feelings with the truth, so you know he's not lying to you. Now listen, there is something you can do now, okay? Take deep breaths, in through your nose, out through your mouth, that's it, just like that. All right, we need you to get the word out to everyone working Ermich to watch out for this guy. And if someone does see him, they don't go with him unless he picks two of them. And when he leaves, we need a pair to be brave and tail him. Find out where he goes upside. Tonight, Levi and I will watch the area by the stairs he took Tabby up. Tomorrow, we'll meet with you, and you'll give us any information you got. We'll get to the bottom of it." The absence of the words, "we'll find her," was unfortunate, but all three of them knew they would be less of a promise and more of a lie. Working girls that went missing never came back breathing. Claudia understood what she needed to do, and Mel's words had given her purpose and a modicum of hope. She took some more time to regain her composure, and then she got to her feet with Mel and hugged her again before giving her and Levi a grateful look. "I really appreciate you two," she said. "Don't worry about it," Levi said, "and don't let that bread go to waste." She looked down at the little loaf she'd been clutching this entire time, a little wisp of a smile on her lips. Then she wiped her eyes of her final tears and went to spread the word. When it was just the two of them again, Mel sighed heavily. I don't like this. Me neither, he said. Of all the things they did, tracking down devious Johns was the most difficult. Robbing warehouses and nobles, making gruesome examples of the people that stole orphans off the streets, and even toppling rival gangs were generally well received by the citizens of the Undercity. The heists brought them much-needed food, clothes, and medicine that they would otherwise be unable to obtain. Keeping the children safe went without saying. While the families of the dead gang members would be upset, most of the citizens were happy to be brought under Levi and Mel's protection. However, hunting malicious clients was a tricky endeavor. If he and Mel got too heavy-handed, they'd scare off the regular customers, and the people they were trying to protect would lose their source of income. And while no prostitute wanted there to be menaces out and about, many of them were scared to speak up for fear it would lead to customers getting leery and going elsewhere. It would be one thing if the man had had a great big scar going down his face, something unique and undeniable, but the man that had taken Tabby was so unremarkable other than his freckles, which in and of itself wasn't an uncommon feature for the sun-kissed upsiders, that they would have a hard time turning down clients who matched his description as well. Levi and Mel positioned themselves on the flat roof of a two-story building that was just before the stairway connecting upside and downside Stowe Hess that Claudia had indicated. The roof had a small lip about 10 centimeters high that afforded them cover if they laid flat, but with the dimness of the area and their dark clothing, they weren't likely to be noticed. Mel was hunkered down beside him, arms folded on the ledge, chin resting upon them daintily as she surveyed the people coming and going below. Her blonde curls that caught the light of the torches and gas lamps so well were hidden under a large black bandana, as was the lower half of her face. All he could see was one big green eye, vigilant, sharp, hungry. He knew Tabby's death had twisted into her like a shiv. They'd just gone to visit the two girls today since some rare downtime had fallen into their laps. Levi himself was still stunned, and there was a part of him that still hadn't caught up to the present and believed that none of it had happened. Living in the Undercity, doing the things that he and Mel did, it felt like this massive cave was just one big jug with everyone thrown inside, jostled and sloshed, in and out of one another's lives too quickly to cling together. But he and Mel had managed to clutch to each other, and they still hadn't let go. He put a hand on her shoulder and squeezed lightly. She met his eyes for a moment, and the jaggedness in hers softened before she turned back to the street below. Then she took an arm out from under her chin and wove her fingers together with his on her shoulder. Her touch was always so warm and so soft, like he was holding a little piece of morning sunlight. "Levi, do you think we're stretching ourselves too thin?" she asked suddenly. "Why?" "We took over Trost ages ago, and then headed north and landed Ermeek, which was all well and good, and now we have from Ermeek to Klorba. I don't know. If we had just kept to Trost and Ermeek and the space between, could we—" Her full question was floating in the damp air between them. "Could we have prevented this?" Levi sidled closer so their arms were brushing, not minding that the movement further dirtied his front. "No," he said. "No matter how big or how small we get, we can't save them all, Mel." "But I want to," she hissed. 10,000 lives, and it's still not enough." He didn't really know what that number meant, and figured she just said it out of frustration. She'd been obsessed with helping people from the second day he'd known her, and she'd never once stopped. They'd witnessed and caused enough deaths that they had both learned to mold the dismay and remorse into steel that coated their hearts and made them stronger for the next one, but that didn't mean that it ceased to hurt. "We'll get the bastard," he promised. There was a soft smile in her eye for him that he wanted to lock away so he could keep it safe and view it whenever he wanted. Instead, he freed his fingers from hers and went back to watching the street, content to have their arms touch. They had work to do. The hours dripped like condensation from the cave ceiling, but the John didn't show. No brown-haired man with freckles used that stairway the entire night or early morning, and the two of them wound up with nothing but sore bones and rigid disappointment. They picked themselves up, and he watched Mel stretch her arms up high, yawning under her bandana. The so-called free time that had led to this had been brought by them not sleeping the night before. They were meant to go after a wagonload of produce later today to then hand out to people south of Klorba. It wouldn't be impossible to have Mel handle the wagon while he kept an eye on things down here, but she was bent on using those new swords, and she wasn't terribly good with them yet. And the thought of leaving her down here alone when there was some freak on the loose. He knew she could take care of herself. He knew it better than anyone else alive. Made him deeply uneasy. The fact of the matter was that neither Claudia nor Tabby were stupid girls. They weren't weak, either. Levi knew for a fact that Tabby wouldn't have been dumb enough to let this person take her somewhere risky, and she could hold her own against most people in a fight if she had to. Whoever this man was, Levi believed that he was truly dangerous. "What do you want to do?" Mel asked him, relaxing her arms. "Let's check up with Claudia and go from there." So they did. It didn't take long to find her. She was always on one of two streets. As soon as Claudia saw the two of them approaching, she waved them over, looking frantic. They doubled their pace and saw her with another girl a few years younger than them, with tears streaking her cheeks. "He got another one," Claudia said. "Where?" Mel demanded, at an instant boil. "We didn't take our eyes off the stairs the entire night." "I don't know where he came from or where he took Lucy," the other girl said, voice thick. Levi gave the girl a sharp look, meant to jolt the panic out of her system so she could be rational. "Tell us what you can." "He looked just like the guy Claudia described. Brown hair, freckles. Said he didn't want me, but he wanted my friend, and they left. He saw me following them and told me to get lost, and I was scared, so I did. That was hours and hours ago, and she's still not back. He took her, didn't he? He took her, and she's not coming back." She devolved into sobs, and Claudia held her while Mel made fists. She was burning brighter than a comet. She was so furious at having lost someone else. Levi could tell she was struggling to keep her voice even as she said, "I need you to think really hard, and tell me where you two were when he approached you, which direction he came from, and which direction he left." At present, the girl managed to string together enough words to form an answer. They'd been on the western side of Undercity Ermich, not too far from the inn, and another set of stairs that connected them to Upside. That was the direction the man had headed to, at least. This told them just about fuck all, though. Neither that stairway, nor the one he and Mel had waited at, were close. Either the man was renting rooms at inns, or he could afford carriages, both of which only made him harder to track. And while he and Mel could split up to stake out both of the stairs, there were four other sets in Ermich. They couldn't be everywhere at once, and even if they got people to take up watch, they were so distant that they wouldn't be able to share information until another woman had been taken. Mel opened her mouth, no doubt to say something brash, and Levi cut her off before she made promises she wanted to but couldn't keep. "We'll be back tonight to try to catch him. Make sure everyone knows to look out for this fucker." Claudia nodded as Mel clapped her mouth shut and mechanically withdrew a little loaf of bread from her sack that she handed to the crying girl. Levi turned around and grabbed Mel by the arm, making sure that in her distraught state she wouldn't just engage the ODM gear on her waist and take off to do something silly. She could be such an idiot when she got like this. "First, we eat," he said, as they set a brisk pace westward. "Next, we get that wagon. Then we put one person on each stairway, with a flare." "We don't have flares," she said. "We'll get flares. That way we can use the ODM gear and get to wherever they are quickly." "How are we going to get 6 flare guns before nightfall? They're not easy to come by." There she went again, diving headfirst into the problem and latching onto the first idea without considering whether it was the best. He gave her a light shove, and she glared at him in response. "Who said they had to be flare guns? We just need to find a few miners who can give us some of their hand flares." The indignation steamed out of her eyes, and her shoulders slumped a little. "You're right. I'm so pissed I can't think straight." "Well, knock that shit off," Levi said, not afraid to be cold with her. "Even if you get pissed, stay level-headed." "You make it look so easy." "That's because it is." Now she shoved him back, a little smile on her brow. "You want to bathe before or after the job?" He rolled his eyes. The dirt crawled across his skin like ants with every movement he made, and he still hadn't forgotten the nits. However, he had no doubt that the job would get him filthy again, and tonight they'd find themselves lying on dirty roofs. Was there even a point? Every day was a new mess, and he only had so many changes of clothes. "Let's go to an inn Upside," she said. "You'll keep yourself clean during the job, I'm sure, you weirdo." Levi didn't need anything fancy, and he told her as much, but she had the idea in her head, and there was no changing her mind. She wrapped her little fingers around his wrist to tug him to one of their safe houses, and he didn't think to pull away. Things had changed from the night she'd gotten those peculiar swords. Where she'd blush and shy away from him, now she sought him, and he had to hide how much this made him preen. They grabbed clean clothes and headed upside. It occurred to him, as she purchased them a room, that this was her attempt to comfort him after the news about Tabby and their failure last night. Giving him a proper shower in a clean room, a hot meal, and a few hours' sleep in a bed with her was the best way to soothe everything away, and she knew it. And as for Mel, the only thing that would make her feel better was when they found this asshole. Sometimes he loved her tenacity, but other times he found it obsessive to the point that it became destructive. Over the years, he'd come to view his role in their partnership as something akin to a sheath, and it was a role he accepted readily. If he couldn't control her, no one could. After a couple hours' sleep, they got up and left the inn. They robbed the merchant's wagon easily enough, snuck the goods down to the Undercity district that was scheduled for that day, and doled out the food. Seeing kids and struggling people smile and realize that they had meals enough for a few more days made the unpleasant task of killing the wagon guards feel less of a sin and more of a small toll. 8 men were dead, but 10 times as many people were fed. Levi didn't allow himself to think much deeper into this. He never liked where his thoughts took him. That evening they went back to Undercity Ermich and rounded up enough acquaintances and flares to put their plan into place, and with their ODM gear on and ready, they stood on the roof ledge of a tall building in the center, ready to jet towards the first flash of bright red light that they saw. Mel was drumming her fingers against her thigh as she scanned one direction and he the other. "What do you want to do when we find him?" she asked. "We'll cut him up and dispose of him," he said. The thought didn't bring him any pleasure. Well, that wasn't as true as he wanted it to be. Tabby had been a good girl, guilty of nothing more than having a hard life, and Claudia would forever live wondering if she could have prevented her sister's death. There was the other girl, was Lucy her name, that was gone now too. On top of that, there were few people Levi hated more than men who mistreated working women. He wanted to find this piece of shit and carve the penance out of him, slowly and thoroughly. "A flare, southeast stairs." Mel had already engaged her grapples before she'd finished the first sentence, and Levi shot after her with a snarl. "Don't just run straight into things, you fucking idiot." She was hell-bent on catching this man today, though, and she ignored him, burning way more gas than was acceptable, considering how hard it was to refill. Levi grit his teeth and reluctantly matched her pace. In under a minute, they had traversed the dim streets and gotten themselves onto the roof that a kid was standing on, a flare still burning bright in his hand. "Brown hair with freckles. Took a girl up the stairs," the boy said. Mel gave him an apple she'd had in a sack on her back in thanks and leapt off the roof to land in a feline crouch before pouncing to her feet and dashing up the stairs. Levi swore and bounded after her, telling her to slow the fuck down, but she had already vanished up the dark tunnel. A trickle of ice water ran down his spine as he took the steps 3 at a time. She was too far ahead for him to catch up, and the man seemed to have already reached the top since he couldn't see anyone else in the tunnel with them. What if he was waiting at the top of the stairs, just out of sight, ready to take Mel with him? She wasn't even trying to mask her footsteps, and her boots slammed on the stones. He saw as Mel reached the top, her ebony silhouette cutting out a piece of gaslit upside Ermich. Then she darted left to vanish from his sight. She was always doing this, slipping away from him, getting herself into all kinds of shit, and then trying to laugh it off afterwards. It was a wonder his heart hadn't given out. Grinding his teeth on the growing irritation, he dashed the rest of the way up and looked in the direction she'd gone, but she wasn't there. The street was empty but for 2 upsider women on their way home from the markets. It was a couple hours after sunset, and with only the street lamps to aid him, he cast around for Mel as the concern grew in his gut, expanding and stretching it to the point he felt ill. Had she been taken? She had that monstrous strength, but she wasn't immune to surprises, and Levi's reflexes were faster than hers by a fraction. It wasn't impossible for someone to get the upper hand on her. Levi jogged down the street, scanning the intersections for a girl with 2 swords, ODM gear, and a chest big enough to be a safety hazard, but he saw no one. He didn't even see any men. How had the John managed to disappear so quickly? And where in the fuck was Mel? Shit. Had he lost her? He wanted to use the ODM gear to get himself onto a roof, somewhere he could survey the whole area easily, but if there happened to be an MP or garrison soldier nearby that saw him with stolen military gear, he'd have to abandon his search for Mel entirely in order to escape arrest. Even coming upside at nighttime with the gear on like this was risky. He needed to find her and get the two of them back down to the Undercity where they'd be safe. The John seemed to be gone, and the knowledge that they had failed again burned cold inside him, but his concern for Mel overrode all of that right now. When he caught a glimpse of someone in the distance, leaning against a wall with two sword sheaths on their hips, the tenseness in all of his muscles seemed to diffuse. He dashed over to find her trying to catch her breath in the shadows, sweat dripping down her brow. It looked like she'd run around carrying a horse on her back, she was so exhausted, and he could see that her shirt had gotten ripped, revealing her midriff, and it was dark and glistening. "Not mine," she panted, putting a hand over her exposed navel. "He pulled a knife on me, managed to rip my shirt, but I got him in the leg. It won't have killed him, though. Fucker got in a carriage he had waiting, took the girl. Looks like they were heading towards Central Ermich." She slammed a fist into the wall she was leaning against, awash in guilt at having failed again, just like he was. Then her legs seemed to give out, and she slid down to the ground. He had been willing to believe her when she said it hadn't been her blood, but sweat, tremors, pallor, and now losing her footing had him on his knees beside her, leaning down to look closer at the area in question. Gently, he used the hem of her shirt to wipe away some of the blood coating her front, but she had been right. She only had a very light scrape, like a cat had raked a claw across her gut. "I'm fine," she said. "Just give me a few minutes. Sit with me." He did, but only because putting his back against the wall would help hide the ODM gear. Sometimes these strange spells of fatigue struck her after a fight, and he'd never been able to understand why. She must have pushed herself beyond her abilities, and now her body was forcing her to rest. Over the years, he'd come to understand that he and Kenny were stronger than everyone else, but he thought that Mel was the only person that could come close. Most of the time, their performance was equal, though when it came down to the wire, he could be faster and stronger than her. Every once in a while, he wondered if maybe he asked too much of her. Maybe, since he was the only person she'd known for the first couple years, she thought that she had to push herself to the point of breaking just to keep up with him. Maybe she thought that this was a normal existence. Levi felt a selfish gratefulness at having found her that night all those years ago. Of all the street urchins to take in, he had happened upon the only one that could not only match his pace, but push him to be more. However, when he saw her dejected and weak, he feared that he was the only one gaining from their relationship. "I've had enough of this," she said suddenly. "I have a plan." Her eyes were on some distant point down the street, sharp enough to slice right through the walls. Levi knew from her expression alone that no matter how dumb it was, he would be unable to change her mind. Her pig-headedness made his body temperature rise, but there was a smaller part of him he kept hidden that loved having someone unafraid of his ire. "I'll dress up and have him pick me," she said. If only her plans weren't so fucking stupid. Levi grit his teeth as he combed through dozens of reasons not to go through with this. He picked himself up and held a hand out to Mel, who took it so he could tug her up. Still a little weak, she stumbled for a moment before fixing herself. Her fingertips were softer than silk, and he thought it a miracle that she didn't have blisters or calluses from those swords of hers, despite how she'd been swinging them around earlier today. They stood in the shadow of a house in Upside Ermich, nothing but a few centimeters of thick summer nighttime between them, and Levi dreamed briefly of pushing the night out of the way to feel more than just her hands, to lean in and feel and smell and taste. "Thanks," she said. Her fingers dragged down his palm to catch on his fingertips and linger for one more instant before going back to her side. Thunder rumbled far, far in the distance. A storm was on its way from the west and would reach them sometime in the morning, no doubt. The low grinding of the sky pulled him out of his fanciful thoughts, and he remembered to scowl as he turned away from her to head back into the Undercity. She followed after him easily, and he squashed down the relief that her spell had passed so it wouldn't dull his anger. "There's no way in hell I'm letting you do that," he said. "He's got at least 3 girls now. He just about gutted you, and he's unpredictable." "That's exactly why I should let him take me," she said. "I can handle him." "Did you just decide you wanted some ventilation in that shirt, then?" "Hilarious. Listen, I had my hair and mouth covered. He won't know it's me when I'm down there. But the moment you try to break his arms, he won't give a shit who you are. I'll hit him so hard and fast he won't have time to do anything. Levi knew that she was capable of vicious surprise attacks when she wanted, so he tried a different angle. There's close to 100 girls on the streets every night. Why would he pick you? Mel pranced down a couple steps in front of him, her breasts jiggling with each calculated bounce. Despite himself, his mouth went dry, and the little thoughts he had before grew bigger and harder to ignore, but he snapped, "Not everyone's into big tits. Tabby had small tits. What about Lucy and tonight's?" Mel's brow creased in a frown, and she went back to walking normally. "I don't know about Lucy since I never met her, but I got a glimpse of tonight's, and she didn't have much to write home about. See? You're not even his type." She seemed to take grave insult to this, and leveled him with a full glower. "I'm plenty of people's type." "Is there a sudden glut of people that love violent, brash idiots? I'll shove you down the stairs. How's that for violent? Put your hands on me and see what happens." It was the same sort of childish threat they'd banded back and forth for a decade now, but he could taste the soft but rich desire of his words, and he wondered if she could, too. The stairway was too dark to tell if the little spark in her eyes was irritation or desire. Funny how similar the two looked and felt. "I don't want to tire you out," she said easily. "We have work to do." He wanted to egg her on more and see just how far she'd let him take things. Everything between them had changed a couple weeks ago, and what had once been a perfectly plotted map between them was now as foreign as the world outside the walls. She let him take her hand from time to time now. Would she let him touch her more? Press her against the wall of this dim tunnel, pin her arms back, and ravish her? But she was right. There was work to do. "There's no point in you becoming a decoy," he said. "We don't know where he'll be tomorrow, or if he'll even want another whore tomorrow. You know these freaks go quiet for a while sometimes before they get the itch again." Mel sighed. "Standing up on high and using the ODM gear isn't quick enough. Even with the flares, it didn't work. We need to be on the ground. And if we put ourselves on the ground, at best we'll only have a 1 in 6 chance of him choosing the stairway we're near." "No, 1 in 4 after tonight," she said. They'd reached the bottom of the stairs and were back in the Undercity. They'd have to find whoever was the poor girl's friend and deliver the bad news. Mel spoke quickly and lowly, so only he could hear. "If he has any smarts at all, and I think it's clear he does, he won't pick from the same pool twice. He knows the girls get leery. He'll use a stairway he hasn't before. He's already used 2, and there's only 4 others left. 1 in 4 chance. 1 in 2 if we split up." "No," Levi said, surprised by how forcefully the word had come out. "We're not splitting up." "If we don't, it means we have a 75% chance of losing another girl, instead of 50. And if you're on your own, there's a chance he could take you." She gave him a stunned look. The words had come out rushed, blunt, and incomplete. Hastily, he said, "These girls only have themselves, and maybe a family member or two to look after. You have a 1/6 of the Undercity. We can't afford to lose you." She was angry enough to set fire to him. "The lives of our people are all equal. Mine's nothing special either. I'm doing this, Levi. When the shops open up tomorrow, I'm going to get myself an outfit." Levi bit off a growl of frustration in his chest. Some sheath he was. He tried arguing with her more through the night as they traversed their turf in the Undercity on a routine check. Some people came up to them to chat or express their gratitude for something they'd done, but mostly they kept a respectful distance. No matter what reasoning Levi used, Mel wouldn't hear a single word. She was absolutely hell-bent on this ridiculous plan of hers. She had it in her head that maybe he was capturing the women and they were being held somewhere, so if she were taken by him, she could possibly free them all. It was so farcical, Levi had chewed her out for 5 solid minutes, reminding her how many of these fuckers they'd dealt with already, and how all of them killed the girls and dumped the bodies quickly after. They'd never had one that tried to keep them like fucked-up pets, and there was no reason that this man would be any different. Mel just wanted to believe that Tabby and the other 2 girls were alive, and while he wished he could believe that as well, he was a born realist, and he would beat the truth into her if he had to. Well, he wouldn't physically beat her. He'd never lay a hand on her. Verbal assaults weren't off the table, though. By morning, the sole thing he'd managed to do was make himself hoarse, and so furious that everything inside him was twisted and matted. Mel had only grown more recalcitrant with each passing hour. They'd wandered to one of their hideouts in Undercity Trost, and here Mel changed into a shirt that wasn't bloody and stashed her ODM gear and swords, as well as procured a small pouch of coins from a hiding spot in the wall. "I'm gonna go shopping," she said. "You can stay here if you want." "Why the fuck would I do that?" "Well, after I buy these clothes, I'm gonna have to make them look used. I figured you wouldn't like that." True, watching her get a new outfit soiled on purpose would only cause his blood pressure to rise further. He still said, "No, I'm in this with you." Mel was probably the only person in the world who could glean 4 times more than what he said. Her brows rose in surprise, and he could tell that her mouth had dropped open under the black bandana. "No," she began. "It's either this or I knock you out and tie you up," he said. She stared at him for several moments, but she knew that he didn't go back on his words. And that was how, the following evening, Levi found himself standing on a street corner in Undercity Ermeek, dressed in a tattered, dingy dress, imagining all the ways he would murder Mel. He was picturing how she'd react to him throwing a bucket of fat, hairy spiders at her when a man approached the two of them. Tall, a few years older than them, upsider, brown hair, dark eyes, and freckles. "You," he said, staring Levi up and down, "you'll do." Levi hadn't gone to any great lengths to look like a woman, besides the dress and a very small amount of padding in the bosom area. His hair was still the same undercut he'd always had, but Mel had combed some of the longer locks forward to give him bangs. Against his will, she'd also applied some pale rose powder to his cheeks. Other than that, he was himself. The long sleeves of the dress hid his decidedly unfeminine biceps, and the skirt had enough material that it made the lack of hips less obvious. Levi pushed himself off the wall he'd been leaning against and went to follow the man. He didn't want to talk too much because he couldn't be bothered to change his voice to sound more girlish, and anyways, he expected this to be over soon. Mel watched him go, in the same stupid getup with her long blonde curls and pigtails that had drawn many a man she had turned down. Levi began dropping a few strands of her hair out of the little pocket sewn into the dress so she could follow after him at a safe distance. The man led Levi up the stairs to topside, and Levi couldn't believe their good fortune. Not only had the man chosen to strike again, he and Mel had happened to be waiting at the right stairway, and he had selected one of them. Even better, he hadn't taken Mel. The man was quite a bit taller than Levi, but that didn't mean anything. He knew that he could handle him without any issue. By the time Mel caught up to them, Levi would have the man tied up like a hog, ready to be skewered on the spit. They'd reached upside. Few people were on this street, and the John grabbed Levi's wrist and dragged him none too gently into a more secluded, shadow-bound alley. He pressed Levi back into the brick of a house, ground his entire front against Levi's as he pinned him there, and leaned down to suckle on his neck. Levi vowed to cut out the man's tongue first. He focused on the things that were happening around him, and not to him. He could smell wet stone. It had rained all that morning and early afternoon, just as he'd predicted. He could hear the clop of hooves on cobblestone. A carriage at this hour? He couldn't hear Mel approaching, but she was supposed to be sneaking up on them. The man had wrapped long fingers around both of Levi's wrists and brought them above his head. Levi could break out of it any time he wanted, but he was waiting. So far, they didn't have any evidence that this was the John they were looking for. He fit the description all right, but so did hundreds of other men. They had to be sure, or they'd jeopardize the livelihoods of the women down there. The man rustled around in his pockets for a moment, and Levi thought maybe he was reaching for a condom. They weren't the most common, but any smart upsider with a little spare coin was wise to invest. Levi was very surprised, therefore, when he felt a sharp pinch on his neck, right where the man had been kissing him, and the world spun so frantically that he couldn't keep up with it. The last thing he saw before his field of vision narrowed and faded into darkness was the glint of leering teeth and the tip of a syringe. And that's the end of the chapter. Thanks a lot for listening. This was part one of the flashback. We'll wrap it up in the next chapter. And you may have noticed that the dynamics between Himmel and Levi are really different in each of the flashbacks. This is a conscious decision on my part, and that's because even though the flashbacks aren't told in chronological order, their feelings for one another sort of develop gradually over time. So we get all these different snapshots of how they feel for one another, and based on the timing, either they're just friends, or right now they're kind of somewhere in the middle, in this mysterious, you know, place that's neither friendship nor dating, and I have so much fun writing these chapters. Anyways, thanks again for listening. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you liked it, pop onto AO3, give me a little emoji or a little comment letting me know. And yeah, take care. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.